Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Four. So, can you state your name and count to 10 for me?
David Falk, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Thanks. And he's in third grade?
Mm-hmm.
So how old is Jonathan?
Jonathan is 8, and he's going to turn 9 in May.
What else can you tell me about him?
Jonathan isn't, though, he's not really into chess that much. He knows how to play and stuff, and he likes Lego a lot. He's very much into Lego and stuff. He can build amazing things with Lego and stuff. He also likes some video games and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any pets at home?
Yes, I used to have a pet rat, but she died. So now I have a pet dog named Buddy, and he's almost 1 year old. He's a black dog.
Do you have a favorite TV show or movie?
I don't really watch TV very much because I don't really have that much time. We don't have cable on, so basically the only thing that you watch is PBS, and that's not my favorite channel. So. I like lots of movies. Spellbound, I really like. I'm into spelling, and I'm into spelling as well. Some other ones too.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really name them off the top of my head, but
that's alright. Do you like to read books or magazines?
I like reading books.
Yes.
I like the Charlie Bone series. It's kind of similar to Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
I like some other books too. Oh, magazines. I also read a magazine called Chess Life.
Oh, okay.
It's about chess.
Yeah. Now, do you want to ask me anything?
Not really.
Okay.
<You're> not.
Alright. So now, I'd like to ask you about chess.
Mm-hmm.
So, how long have you played chess?
I first learned how to play chess maybe in my last year of preschool because my dad kind of, I was horrible at it. Dad just kind of showed me how the pieces were. I was a bit sketchy on the rules. And then when I started kindergarten, I started a chess club at Fox Hollow and stuff. And after that, I started getting into dance chess club and started playing tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
My first chess tournament was in grade 2. And I've been working from there. Now I'm going to state championship tournaments.
Everything. So then it was, you said your last year of preschool. About how old were you?
However old you are in your last year of preschool. I don't know.
34,
I guess. 4.
Okay.
Maybe 5.
I'm sorry. Who taught you how to play chess?
My dad. He learned from his father.
Do you have a chess rating?
Yes, I do. Right now, I have an OSCF rating and a USCF rating. So, which do I play?
Tell me about both.
Well, my OSCF rating, the last time I checked on it, it was 970. But I entered a tournament quite recently, and it's going to go up after that. So, and then the USCF rating, I'm not quite sure what it is, but I don't think it's as high. It's slightly lower.
And do you have a chess coach?
Yes. Well, last year, I did my chess, basically the chess teacher for chess club was Jerry Rainey. He organized his Chess Ways, which is done in the Veterans Memorial Building.
Yeah,
and it's a chess program. But now that I'm in middle school, I do chess club with a different teacher. I forgot his name. He's the Roosevelt Chess Club.
Mm-hmm. And so you're a member of the Roosevelt Chess Club.
Mm-hmm. And it's every Tuesday.
And what do you do with chess club?
In chess club, we play games of chess, and we learn we have a lesson where sometimes it might be he simuls all of us and all of us in an end game position, like two rooks looking versus a king, and you have to checkmate it there. Or sometimes it might be finding the best move in a given position, or sometimes it might be analyzing a game from a chess tournament and looking at the game and what that you should have done or whatever.
So how often do you say you play in a week?
In a week? It kind of depends. If there's a chess tournament that week, I can play anywhere up to 12 games.
Mm-hmm.
12 games, and some games which last up to 45 minutes or so. But if there's not a tournament, the number might be more like 3 to 5.
Okay.
Kind of depends if there's a tournament.
But who do you play with the most?
I play with chess club meets every week, and tournaments can happen once or twice a month. Sometimes they don't happen at all during the month.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of depends.
Right. Can you name any famous chess players?
Yeah, Viktor Kramnik is starting to get really good, and he might become world champion, and maybe he already is. I'm not quite up to date about that, but there's also Topalov, which was the world champion for a small amount of time, and then he lost, and so he's no longer the world champion. Bobby Fischer, he's not playing chess anymore because he broke the rules and, during one of the wars and played in the chess tournament he wasn't supposed to play in Russia. So now he's escaped to Iceland, and so he's kind of hiding it, so he's retired from chess. There's several other players. There's Gary Kasparov. He was world champion for a long time, and he retired because he was starting to get older and stuff. I can name lots of them, but
you know lots of them.
Yep.
Do you ever play chess on your computer?
Yes, but my chess software program broke down and kind of I used to be chess master, which is a game, Chess Master 9000, but it kind of broke. It's not working quite well because I kind of broke it by accident or something. I hope to get Chess Master 10,000. I've also got a new game, but I haven't really installed it yet because I need the password. And my friend gave me the game, but I don't know the password to start it up, so.
That's always a bit of a challenge. Now, tell me why you enjoy chess.
I like chess because, well, it's kind of competitive, and for me, I like competitive things. Which is kind of fun, cookies and stuff. And, chess is. I also like chess because, well, I kind of feel like when I'm thinking about a move, it's kind of like I'm analyzing a position where I'm thinking, well, what should I do? And it's kind of fun to just problem solve like that and use critical thinking skills too. We're expected to record our games with algebraic notation, like knight to b4, n b4, etc. King b4, take b4, and stuff. That puts lots of chess games a step ahead when you start in middle school, starting coordinate planes, because you're already doing that. I also like just playing for fun.
Just for fun.
That's fun.
Alright, so I'm not nearly as familiar with the game of chess. So I'm going to have you explain some things to me.
Mm-hmm.
So bear with me to some of the questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, how many people can play a game of chess at one time?
It kind of depends what game of chess you're playing. There's just a regular tournament game. It's the player with the white pieces versus the player with the black pieces.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a fun game we sometimes play called Bug House, which two players face versus two players, and there are two boards.
Okay.
So these two players are on the team. These two players are on the team. So these are playing each other, and these are playing each other. If this player captures a piece from his opponent, he passes it to his teammate and stuff, and it's kind of an instant death. The first person that will lose their teammate is the killer.
Wow.
You can, there are different versions of that, like, forgot the name for it. It's another version where there's three versus three, and then there's the commander or whatever in the center. I forgot what the name of it was, these players pass their pieces to the center player, and the center player passes his piece to whoever he thinks needs it most in their position. So,
wow.
That gets pretty complicated.
I bet. I've also heard of simultaneous matches.
Yes.
And what is that?
Well, it's where one person can simul a whole bunch of people. Like, a whole bunch of people will be sitting at their own chessboard, but each person will be in a line, and one person might be standing up, and when it's their move, play a board and walk around to another board, walk around.
Mm-hmm.
Or two people may be simulating a whole bunch of people, or five people, so lots of people can play chess. I don't know if there's even a limit.
Wow.
It's kind of like simul.
You're trying to keep everything
in mind. Well, it's difficult for the simuler, but the player that's doing the simul, but usually the player doing the simul is much more experienced. Like,
right.
A chess coach might be simul to doing a simul with all of his students or their students.
Okay. Can you tell me about the different pieces and how they're supposed to move?
Well, there are, the first most important piece of the game is the king, and the king, it kind of depends what game of chess you're playing, because again, there are two, sometimes you're playing chess with a chess clock, and that's when you hit the clock, and then the time starts ticking down from a certain, from like 5 minutes, 4 5 minutes, and so and the time keeps ticking down, and then they play the move and hit the clock. When you're playing what's called blitz with 5 minute chess, there's a rule called capture the king. That's when you don't have to say check in capture the king rules. Instead of saying check when moving somewhere, instead you just keep it quiet. And if they don't notice they're in check, they might move a pawn and you capture the king and win the game. But otherwise, in that game, king is also the most important. You don't want to lose a king, but in regular chess, which is more commonly played, it's a regular game of chess, no blitz blocker.
Right.
The king can't be captured. It's just they might say check, and then it's against the rules to leave your king in check. You must move your king unless it's impossible to do so without getting it being captured, and then that's checkmate, and you lose the game. And so the king is the most important piece, but there is a downfall to the king, because the king can't move very easily. It's kind of like, because it can only move one space, it can move diagonally, forward, backward, sideways, etc. And except can't go off the board. It's on the edge of the board. Nope, can go off the board. But it can move any direction, but only one square in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not very remote. It can't. What's the word? Transport very easily.
Mm-hmm.
So. Then there's the queen, which is an extremely valuable piece. And sometimes we use points to describe the pieces. Like, queen's worth 9 points.
Mm-hmm.
King is worth infinite points, but the queen might be is worth 9 points. And the queen, it's not really wise to get your queen out early in the game, because it can capture and just running away. It's kind of, you lose tempo, which is, I can explain this another time, but the queen can move very similar to the king. It can move forward, diagonally, sideways, backwards, as long as it doesn't go off the board, except it can move as many squares in that direction as it wants, so it can be on this side of the board, you know, straight across to that side of the board. As long as there are no pieces in the way. If your knight is blocking it, or one of your other pieces is blocking it, you can't really jump over it or anything.
Okay.
You just can't block. But you can capture the piece. There's a block piece you can capture. So the queen is very, very, very mobile. And it becomes extremely useful near the end of the game. Then there's the rook. There's only one queen and king in the game, but the rooks, some people call them castles.
Okay.
We use the term rook. But you get two of those, and two rooks is extremely useful near the end of the game, because you can use progression so that you push the king in that direction, force it going in a certain direction. So one rook is worth 5 points, and so if you have two rooks together, they're worth 10 points. It's 5 and 5, so 10 points is more than 9 points. So you'd rather have two rooks than one queen.
Okay.
And rooks are very, very mobile, except not as mobile as the queen, because they can't go on diagonally. They can go forwards, sideways, backwards, left, right, etc. As long as they don't rent pieces or fall off the board.
Okay.
They can capture pieces too. That's the rooks. They start in the corner of the game, so it takes a while until they finally get into the game.
Right.
Beginning of the game, they're not very active. Next is the bishops. The bishops, the bishops and the knights are both worth 3 points, and you get two of them at the beginning of the game. And the bishops and the knights are completely different pieces. But it kind of depends what the position is. If the position is really open, with lots of open space, bishops are slightly more valuable, because they can go anywhere on the diagonal, as long as they don't bump into their own pieces, but they can't capture their opponent's pieces. Anywhere on the diagonal, any direction, as long as it's diagonal, they can't go side to side, and they capture on diagonals.
Okay.
And so they're good in open games. But sometimes it might be really jammed and the pawns are everywhere. I'll explain pawns in a second, but the pawns might be everywhere and it's kind of hard to move around with the bishop. The knights are more valuable because they're the only piece that can jump a piece. Knights are kind of complicated when you're first starting because they don't go in a straight direction like the other pieces. They jump, and all they do is they can go two steps on either forward or to the right or to the left or backward, not a diagonal, but two steps any of those ways, and then one step another way in any of those ways. So not three steps back, but two steps back and one to the right or one to the left, two steps forward, two steps to the right. There are lots of possibilities for them, and they can jump pieces, and they capture by landing on the piece. Same with the other pieces, by landing on the piece, they capture the piece. So they can, so if a knight, a bishop's in the way, they can do the jump. So they kind of make an L shape when they jump, so two one direction, one another direction. And they're useful in closed games because they can be mobile, but the other pieces are. It takes, in the end game, they slowly become less useful because if they're trying to stop a piece from doing something, it takes a while to get to the end of the board because they can't just go straight there. And then there's one last piece, the pawn, which is actually the most complicated piece because it has lots of rules that come with it. There's one really, generally pawns only move one space forward. They can't go backward. They can't go to the either side. But they're different than other pieces because they don't capture by landing forward. They capture if a piece is diagonally in front of them. It can't be diagonally behind. But if there's a piece that's diagonal, just one square diagonal from them and in front of them, the direction they're going, they can take it by going in diagonal. They don't take by going forward. So the only piece that does that. And however, if they're on the starting line, the second line, because the pawns start in this line and the other pieces perspective. Right. So if the pawn's still on its first line, you can move two squares forward instead of only one square forward. So that's the only time it's allowed to do that. And if by any chance, if the piece is in its way, it just won't move. It's just kind of stuck there. So if the two pawns are right next to each other, it can't do anything. But there's a good thing about pawns. If they get to the very last file in the direction they're going, then they promote. And a promotion happens when they're on the last file. And they can choose any piece they want to turn into. Except they can't become a pawn. They can't become a king. So you can choose a knight. It turns into a knight. It can turn into a bishop. It can turn into a queen or rook. Most people choose queens or rooks, depending on the situation. But sometimes knight might be better, you never know.
Right.
It's pushing the pawn to the last file. Might turning into a knight might cause a check to the king and checkmate them by an owl with some weird things.
Candy.
Never know. That's kind of rare. So pawns move like that, so their starting value is 1 point. But or that's what people say. But I think they get more valuable the farther they are, because if it's really close to the end of the board, it's more valuable because at any time it could turn into a much valuable piece. So the pawns have an indefinite value. But so if it promoted to a pawn, if you promote your pawn to a rook, let's say, then the pawn would be captured, basically, it disappears from the board. Instead, if your opponent has captured a rook by this point, they put a rook in its place. That's your color, and they don't want to replace it with your opponent's color. It's a white pawn that promotes, turns into a white rook.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there is also one last complicated rule about pawns, and it's kind of advanced, though. I learned this maybe in fourth grade or so, but it's called en passant, which is French for in passing, and it only works if, let's say, your pawn has advanced. So there are eight ranks. It can go to, let's say, it starts on its second rank.
Mm-hmm.
It's on its sixth rank. So if we move two more squares, it'll be at the end. Wait, no, fifth rank. Excuse me, fifth rank. Sorry. That means if a pawn it's like imagine a pawn's
mm-hmm.
right in front of it, two squares in front of it. So imagine it could go two squares forward, but it can't because it's in the way. If that's the spacing, if this
mm-hmm.
one's one square to the right and to the left,
mm-hmm.
then let's say it pushes two squares forward.
Mm-hmm.
So they're right next to each other. And it doesn't work if there's one that moves one and then one. It only works if it just moved two. You have to do it that turn. You can't just wait. You have to do it immediately that turn. You can take a step forward and in the end passing. Wait, no, you step a step, excuse me. I'm not thinking. You take a step diagonally.
Gotcha.
So you
okay.
Be behind it and it's on it. It's like it's captured. It's like you capture
okay.
it. So it's that diagonally. That's a bit advanced, but it's kind of a bit difficult to
right.
show if I don't have a chessboard here. So.
You did a great job.
That's,
I think I got them all. I got them all written down, the different pieces. How about the goals of chess? So what are the players trying to do?
The players are trying to do the best they can. So, in a tournament, generally you're going for a win,
mm-hmm.
and you might only have a king left, and your opponent has a king and a pawn. There's no way you can win with just a king, so because you don't have any material to make just your king, and the king can't
right.
capture a king, so then the king can't move next to a king because he's threatened by a king. If in that position, you can't really go for a win, but you still want to do your best because you might be able to enforce a draw. Like if your king captures their pawn, then you each have a king and then force a draw
mm-hmm.
to the player from doing. So in those cases, your goal is a draw, but generally you go for a win or go for the best you can do. And goals in chess are, and some goals might be, by the end of this summer, I want a rating of over 1,000 or whatever.
Right.
You know, your goal might be to push your rating to be a certain player in a tournament that you can't, that you're having trouble being, or just improve your chess.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe have better tennis at chess club. And many people have different goals, and my goal is to try to get my rating over 1,000.
Sounds like you're on your way.
Pretty close.
Okay. So, I'm going to ask you about the rules that players need to follow. So, I'm someone, say, I've never played a game of chess before in my life. And so, what do I need to know so that I could sit down and play a game of chess?
You need to know how the pieces move, and I already explained how they move. So you need to know all that. And first of all, most players need to know that you're not trying to, like, as soon as you win, yes, you won, mark that you won on the tournament sheet. Your goal is to kind of show courtesy to your opponent, like, before the game. We're asked to shake hands and say good luck before each tournament game, and you've got to end. So a beginning player would need to know that they're supposed to be courteous,
mm-hmm.
and at the end of the game say good job or whatever,
right.
and not be like, ha, I won, or
yes.
woohoo, I lost. But it's not about really about winning and losing, it's doing the best. So they need to know that they have to be courteous, and that's kind of a rule. And if you're like, aha, I won, or whatever, and you're like, I beat you, you're not very good at chess, then you can get kicked out of tournament.
Okay.
Like, if you're running or screaming or making comments about a game in progress, say, oh, you could do something, then you can get kicked out of tournament. You need to know that there is a possibility of being eliminated from the tournament. And they need to know that, they need to know that you can't, with your king, they need to know that your king can't move any square that piece is currently, not really obtaining, but that the piece is already controlling the rest of it. So
okay.
if a rook's here,
mm-hmm.
and it's controlling this whole file, and this whole file, I can't move into that square because I'd be in check. Because I'd
right.
be losing myself with a check. And most tournament games, it's good courtesy to say check when you move your opponent into check. You got to remember that, like, if they have a rook here and you have a king here, you've got a bishop in the way. If you move your bishop out of the way, you'd be check. The bishop is immobile, it can't move. Because it's pinned to your king, because if it moves, then they take. But then if they wouldn't take, they'd just say that's an illegal move.
Okay.
There's some other rules, you'd have to follow those rules, and you have to follow the rule that you can't move twice in a row. You can't move, and then move, and then move, and then move, etc. And, you can't make comments about someone else's game after that, etc.
Mm-hmm.
That's most of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotta be something. That's basically it. You just need to know how the pieces work, and when a checkmate happens, how to identify if it's checkmate.
Okay.
And there's one other term used, it's called a stalemate. And that's one last rule. And the stalemate rule is if there's a rook, if a king can't, if their opponent, none of their pieces can move,
mm-hmm.
like their pawn can't move because another pawn's there, you can't do anything.
Right.
And their king can't move anywhere, but it's not in check, and if the king's not currently in check, they're in stalemate, they can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that rule, you've got stalemate, is a draw, and both players tie the game, regardless of who's winning.
Mm-hmm.
Neither player can move. If the person whose turn it is can't move, the person who just moved doesn't move again to change it. It's just, if the game's over and it's a draw, then they each tie. In the tournament, you mark that each player got half a point.
Okay.
So, and, I guess, well, sorry, I highly recommend that you record your games during a game. It's not required at every tournament. They don't force you to. But I highly recommend it because it kind of helps you. You slow down your game a bit. Not moving as fast, so you have more time to think as writing the move down.
Right.
It's also thinking about it, just writing it down. It gives you more time to reflect instead of just moving the piece.
Right.
And in some tournaments they have, and not all tournaments do this, but some tournament directors use the touch move rule and the release move rule. The release move rule states that you've got a rook, and let's say you place it somewhere and you let go, that your move is permanent. You can't you can't move it somewhere else. The release move rule. And sometimes that's accompanied with the touch move rule. If you touch your rook, let's say I put it here, and I haven't let go though, I still have to, as long as I touch that rook, I have to move it somewhere.
Okay.
So sometimes you use the touch move rule. If you touch it, you have to move that piece. If it's legal to use it, because sometimes it might not be legal to move that piece anywhere, if it's trapped or whatever. I guess rules. And there's other clock rules, but usually you don't play with clock unless it's like a tiebreaker game.
Okay.
They need to speed the game up. So that's basically the rules. You need to learn the strategies and openings.
And that's one thing. Once you know that, once you're comfortable with the rules, what are some key strategies that every good player should know?
You should know how it'll identify different openings. Like, and check your move for several things. First, is it legal? Is it legal? And second, would that endanger? If before you even touch the piece, you think about them. You identify if you have this. In chess club, we have the thing where we do prime moves, and we think in our head, identify a few moves that might be possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of analyze several steps. First, if I move there, could they checkmate me? If I move there, could they take me? Sometimes it's okay if they take me because it might be a sacrifice that lures them into a trap or whatever. But what's my reason to do this? Am I just moving it for the sake of moving it, or do I have a reason? If I move there, what would they do next? Would that be bad or good? And you go through an analysis, using that analysis for several moves. Like, you might think all the possibilities of one move, like moving your king out of the way, blocking the check, etc.
Okay. Excellent. How long does it usually take to play a game of chess?
It kind of depends if you're playing the clock. Playing there's 1 minute chess where each player has 1 minute on the clock. The players are furiously moving with the clock.
Right.
They're literally analyzing 10 moves ahead. Except extremely fast. And those games go extremely fast. Like, you just total the sum of the number on each clock. If each player has 1 minute, the games go last 2 minutes. Or less, if the game's over 4-1.
Mm-hmm.
So less than 2 minute game. It can last. So some games have some games played by grandmasters have lasted over 10 hours.
Ugh.
Really, really long games, like, imagine.
More
than 5 minutes a move.
And is that what makes it take so long?
Yeah, because they're thinking an extremely long time on every single move. They do a much more advanced analysis and stuff, so it's much more. Yeah. World record games have gone on for multiple days. But that's in the world record book. But, your question was, how long does it usually take?
Yeah, just the average game.
Well, if I'm playing an opponent that's extremely difficult, I usually think that's the high rating. don't judge a person by their rating, because you never know. They could have a, they could be an unrated player. They've never been rated, but they're still an extremely good player, so don't judge by their rating. But, because ratings aren't always extremely accurate. It could be overrated or underrated, but, so the, when I'm playing an like a person about my my age, I usually take half an hour long, at least half an hour to finish the game, and it's pretty gets a bit intense. But if I'm playing an sometimes I can beat opponents in less than 5 minutes, but in a real tournament game. But that generally doesn't happen. So for an average player, a game can last, it probably lasts 20 minutes, maybe.
Okay. I think we discussed what makes a game last a long time, and a little bit about
the players are extremely even. Like, they're
right.
Really similar ratings. It takes a long time. One player is much better than, not really better, but much more experienced than another player. Then they'll probably win faster. The game might finish faster. So the longest games are played by two people that analyze their moves and are both near the same level of chess.
And then what makes the game go fastest? And what would cause a game to be really short?
If there's a clock or whatever. I've seen games where there's not a clock. One player's recording, they're extremely advanced player, and one player's just beginning, and they're not recording. So the one player's waiting 30 seconds every move and thinking about the game, while the other player is just moving. So if you're not thinking about your games as much, it goes faster. Or if you use tactics on them really early in the game, like they accidentally leave their queen unguarded and take the queen. If you have an advance, well, as I said earlier, there's a point system.
Right.
If you're way ahead in points, that means you can look at your position, you have much more bigger value.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like your army or troops is more, I don't know, stronger in force or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Material isn't always the thing that wins the game, but usually that makes the game go faster.
Mm-hmm.
Except for if your opponent's not doing as well as you, you just take each piece and win. Now, there are ways to checkmate two to eight moves. It's possible. Move, checkmate.
Nice.
It's called fool's mate. It only happens if your opponent makes those deliberate moves. They'll cause them to lose the game in two moves, but that would be like that. Usually opponents don't purposely make those certain moves. Well, the shortest fourth mate is four moves. Scholar's mate. Unless the opponent already knows the scholar's mate and blocks it.
I know we've talked a bit about the chess clock. Now you said they use a chess clock if there are 1 minute moves, 2 minute moves. Is there other times that you'd be using the chess
clock? 5 minute moves, 30 minutes, 15 minutes on each clock.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes like a game might like they have a schedule for each turn. They want a second round to begin at a certain time. If certain games are going way too long, like they're only like in the middle of the game, and the game's supposed to be finished in 30 minutes, or the next round's supposed to begin, so they'll put a clock like 15 minutes for each player, and sometimes. The kids might organize a blitz tournament around themselves where they just play blitz games and stuff. But the clocks, generally in a regular tournament, they don't start you with a game, but if your game's going a long time, they'll put a clock on your game to control the time and make sure. And stuff. So, yeah. Half an hour, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, 5, even 1 minute. There's bullet, thunder, and lightning chess. Those are disastrous. You usually make lots of blunders. But the fortunate thing is, your opponent doesn't have the time to realize you're making blunders because they're making blunders because it's going so fast.
Is there anything else you want to tell me about chess?
Well, not really. That's pretty much it. I'm a bit tired.
You? I have learned so much. Oh my goodness, that's great. So thank you for coming in and talking to me today. You've been very helpful, and I enjoyed working with you. And I learned things today that I had no idea, so thank you.
That's very helpful.
Let me go ahead.